Hello and welcome to a very special edition of The Big Fight. Today we're going to be taking a look at the boundary between the state and religion. And a couple of incidents have really happened to get us thinking about this. As much as we applaud India for its diversity and its pluralism, there are days and there are times when we wonder, do Indians sometimes really push the limits when it comes to religion? Do we take it to extremes where state intervention sometimes becomes necessary? Take, for instance, the recent case of the barely 13-year-old Aradhana from Secunderabad, who fasted for more than 2 months, surviving on little other than boiled water. 2 days after she completed that fast, Aradhana suffered a cardiac arrest that her young, famished body could not survive. The young monk, or Bal Tapaswi, as she was called, was then adorned like a goddess as her funeral procession was taken into a Shobha Yatra, perhaps for others to follow. Now, we all have to ask our questions. Did we somewhere fail her as her teachers, her community, her peers, and her elder by not raising a voice against it? Others will say, you should not interfere in this. She was essentially carrying out a religious function. She was doing what her religious devotion asked for, and therefore there is nothing which anyone else should do. And if anyone, including the state, tries to interfere, it is a question of interfering in people's religious beliefs. And now we're seeing that same thing being repeated one more time when the entire debate and discussion happens over triple talaq. Now, again, should the state be intervening? Because it's a question of the fundamental rights of Muslim women. But the Muslim personal law board says, no, you're not. You should not be doing anything about this. There is no uniform civil code. And therefore, when the state or anybody else tries to intervene in this matter, you are interfering in our religious practices. So, all right, where do we stand on this issue? And that's really what we're going to try and figure out. So a range of people joining us to take us through all of this. First, great pleasure to welcome into the studio Zakia Soman, who's the founder member of the Bharatiya Muslim Mahila Andolan, really been spearheading the campaign against triple talaq. And standing next to her, somebody who she spent a lot of time arguing with in the last week and certainly in the last few months, Kamal Farooqi, founder executive member of the All India Muslim Personal Law Board, which just came out in very strong terms and said it's going to boycott the Law Commission's questionnaire and things like that. But moving on to the other subject, it's great to have with us in the studio Vinod Tikku, who's the founder member of the NCPCR, is a child rights activist. We have with us Mridu Jain, who's the publisher of Jain Philosophy Books. Rupin Doshi is with us, a recruitment consultant who belongs to the Jain community. Joining us from Lucknow is Maulana Khalid Rashid Firangi Mehli, who's another member of the Muslim Personal Law Board. And we are being joined from Trivandrum by Rahul Ishwar, who's an author and an activist. Can I just start off, Vinod, with you and the question of Aradhana? Now, here's a young girl doing it voluntarily. I don't think anyone is saying that she was coerced into doing this, carrying out her religious beliefs, but obviously it is something that her 13-year-old body could not take. So now you've had a situation where her parents have been charged with culpable homicide, not amounting to murder. Are there questions that all of us need to answer in this case?
As a society, we have been at times brainwashing children with certain religious fundamental values, which I think we should not. And a child at the age of 9, 10, 11 is not really mature enough to understand those issues. And we force them, in a way, to get into those religious paths where probably even an adult would not want to go into. We have taken cognizance of certain things that in the mats in Karnataka, in the madrasas where children are being doctored, where in certain other institutions, where at church, where the children are being actually forced into certain ways of life where the child should not be. Because for us, the best place that a child has to be in is the school. We still are depriving children.
So it's not
children
to do with one religion or the other. Children are quite often,
yes,
either voluntarily or otherwise, or you can say that they were being influenced into it, persuaded to get into certain actions. And it's, you're right, it spans all communities. It happens elsewhere. We've had horrific cases of children, for example, being motivated or indoctrinated or whatever into becoming suicide bombers. That's the other extreme, of course, not to be compared or connected with this case. Mr. Jain, let me just turn to you. Now, the Jain community has turned around and said, nobody should say anything about this. It's interfering in our religious beliefs. Is that a correct position to take, you think?
No. Whenever there are excesses, the state intervention is required. Now, the state or the legal or the judiciary has its own arena. just like the religious leaders, never intervene into the political scenarios. Similarly, if a state has to intervene, first it has to understand the entire tenets, the followings, and then it can pass a judgment, or then it can intervene and then correspondingly bring in, because this kind of a intervention is required when it goes to or crosses any limits.
But doesn't this cross all limits, a young girl, 13-year-old, fasting for 68 days, it's not, doesn't really require rocket science to say that it is going to have a very major impact on her.
See,
it is going to be a threat to her life.
You're right, but then she had been practicing earlier. She did for 7 days, then for 34 days, and then that was a call for her that she felt that she could do it. And she did not die while fasting.
She's 13 years old.
That's her inner call. Sometimes.
My 13-year-old son was to look at me and say, well, I know, I think that there's some kids at the age of 13 often don't know what they should really be doing or not doing. At that point, isn't it the incumbent upon either the parents or the community or the teachers, failing all of which, for the state to say, no, you're endangering her life?
Vikram, let me tell you one thing. When an oath is taken for a fast, it is not at, you know, straight away for 68 days. Every day the oath is renewed. And when the oath is renewed, we do consider the well-being, the vital statistics are taken into account. That, is she doing good? And then she goes to the guru and then she takes an oath. It's not that she's bedridden or she's totally immobile and then she's taken others. She's not taken. All her vital statistics were intact. Even after she broke the fast, she was reading a book.
She died within 2 days.
She was reading a book after she'd broken
fast. She died within 2 days.
That's true. So she did not know that her capacity.
Obviously, she didn't know. She's 13 years old.
That proves, yes.
She is 13 years old. She did not know. 13-year-old children or 14-year-old or 15-year-old, even 17-year-old children do all sorts of things that they sometimes don't know is going to lead to the results that it does. But that's where it's for the community and for elders or the family.
Yes, it's a point of concern that we need to look into, surely.
All right. Let me just ask you that same question.
If she hadn't died, there was no problem. Okay, you can do
I actually disagree with you. I think there's a problem even if she didn't die. But it
came out only because she died. Nobody took note of it because had she not died, there would have been no problem at all. So the issue is that she died, and because she died, it's important for the state to intervene. There are so many things that are happening in our country.
In her case, of course, it's too late for the state to intervene. What's the state going to intervene with now?
So when the police arrests her parents, okay, there's going to be a deterrent for the rest of the community. And why only the Jain community? All others who are doing things that they should not be doing with their children. And why we keep talking about 13-year-old? Even a 30-year-old may not be able to handle it.
Here in this country, we've been debating juvenile justice. We've said that a 17-year-old gang rapist should not be punished because at 17, he doesn't really know his own mind. And he's a child and he's not. How then can we say that a 13-year-old knows enough to be able to fast or not fast for 60 days?
He or she has been indoctrinated into what's believed to be right by the adults. It's a decision that would have been taken some days earlier, maybe a couple of years earlier. It's not that just 60 days ago she decided to take a vow and go into the fasting. Certainly not.
But they're two extremes. I mean, maybe she was indoctrinated or maybe she wanted to do it. But the question is, even if you want to do it, should somebody restrain
wrong.
You?
It's wrong. It's definitely wrong.
She wanted to
renounce the
world.
At the age of 30.
She wanted to renounce the world and take Diksha. But the Jain principles do not allow this child to take Diksha. So she was stopped. She said, I'll take this path. Because this is the path I'll, reduce my karmic baggage.
Even in Jain community.
Would you allow a 13-year-old child to jump off the second floor? There's no religion attached to it. But because there's religion attached to this, you're justifying it. I think there's a huge disconnect in that. And when you're talking about the state intervention, the state will only come to know, will intervene when they come to know. And they came to know only when she died. So had the state, if there's a deterrent in the beginning, if there's a law which says you can't do these things, then there's that state intervention for you.
I just wanted to check on the legal, what the legal position is out here. And who better to get into this than Justice R.S. Sodhi, one of the most respected judges we've had, and from the Delhi High Court. Obviously, all of this really gets tied up in Article 25 of the Indian Constitution. Maybe I'll just flash the relevant bits so that our viewers can also understand. This is what it says. Subject to public order, morality, and health, and to the other provisions of this part, all persons are equally entitled to freedom of conscience and the right to freely to profess, practice and propagate religion. And then, of course, the other things about how that doesn't restrict the state from making laws restricting economic, financial, and political and secular activity. And also, there are specific provisions for reform in Hindu religious organizations. And then it goes on to say that includes Sikh, Jain, and Buddhist religions. Is the state fully justified in stepping in a case like this and saying, look, if there's a small child who's taking a dangerous fast, we are entitled to intervene because of the health part of it? And there could be other reasons why we step in other cases.
Every religion has a practice, but every practice carries with itself, or over the period of time, begins to carry a lot of baggage. It is this baggage which you are now referring to. So therefore, any baggage that infringes upon the rights of anybody or the constitutional guarantees and its provisions is bad, and the state can certainly interfere. However, if a religion per se, which is allowed to be practiced and propagated, that is a case-to-case study, and the state would be very, very wary to interfere in the religion part of it.
Specifically in this case, Justice Sodhi, a case where a 13-year-old girl is taking a dangerous fast, a fast that eventually leads to her death, would the state have been justified in stepping in and saying, you have to stop this, and we don't care what you think the religious beliefs are?
It's not like this. You see, the whole problem is we do have existing laws which prohibit suicide and or abetting of suicide. No, these are criminal laws themselves.
Although this was not specifically suicide. It's not that she set out to commit suicide. It was just that she was doing something that was dangerous. You know, fasting for 68 days is dangerous. So, you could...
She was only challenging her faculties. That's it. This was not Sandhara, not a Sandhara at all.
This is not Sandhara. So there is a Jain practice called Sandhara where you deliberately set out...
Fast
unto death. And that's not what she was doing in this case. It was not abetment, not suicide or abetment to suicide, but a dangerous practice that somebody should have interfered in.
No. If you say the fast is dangerous, it's very, ironical, because in this...
68-day fast for a 13-year-old child, you don't think it's dangerous?
Actually, see,
it's dangerous
just...
dangerous because she died.
It's a little tricky. Do you know, in this 2016, we've just had a Nobel Prize for fasting by Dr. Japanese scientist, who has proved that autophagy, he's got a Nobel Prize on it for medicine, and he's proved that autophagy is very important, that is self-eat. What is auto? Auto is self, and phagy is eat.
Yes.
And that only happens in starvation.
I've heard the discussions on what fasting is.
Yes.
Maybe for an adult trying it, you could debate it. And it's a question of how many days, 68 days is stretching.
That is the state's perception of adults.
A 13-year-old child fasting for 68 days.
See, each one is having a different kind of capacity. Maybe an adult of 30, as he says, does not have a capacity to fast even for a day. But she had a capacity even for 34 days.
So from the Jain community point of view, 68 days fasting is not a big deal. It happens quite often.
Especially when you're taking water, which is considered as the fourth ahar.
Which is scientifically proved. I mean, Anna Hazare also does that.
Right. So that actually brings up the open question. But let me just throw it open to other communities as well. So Rahul Ishwar, let me get you in on this. Let me extend this argument, because this actually opens up everywhere. And the constitution, especially when it comes to the Hindu community, the constitution very specifically says that the state is allowed to make laws providing for social welfare and reform or the throwing open of Hindu religious institutions of a public character to all classes and sections of Hindu, which is obviously something that you've been dealing with when it comes to throwing open the Sabarimala temple out there. And that's the other question where state intervention versus religion has come in. But theoretically, extending this, if you had a situation, for example, where a 13-year-old girl or even a 25-year-old girl, for example, said it's my religious practice, my religious belief that I want to commit sati in Rajasthan, then the state would be fully justified in intervening, wouldn't it?
India is a land of great diversity. We need to give space for religion, spirituality, their pluralism, but we need to maintain a balance which Albert Einstein says, there should be a religion without science is blind and science without religion is lame. We need not be blind and lame. There is a space for both to exist. There are some gray areas. We should be open to discussion. And rightly said, sati, you know, sati was an absolutely unjustifiable custom. Nobody is going with that. But having said that, there are different temples for males and females. I basically don't believe this is a huge crime. So we need not overstretch our argument of Article 51 into a kind of secular fundamentalism and don't believe Article 14 and 51 are the only articles in Indian Constitution. Yeah, there are space for others. But the humble submission would be, give the space to religion, pluralism, spirituality. If there is a gross violation as defined by a eminent jurist or even Supreme Court feels so, they can definitely come in. But let the space for this pluralism be there, because that's the great diversity and beauty of India.
Yeah, but can I just read out what the person who actually drafted the constitution, B.R. Ambedkar, had to say, seeing as we are looking at what the constitutional position is. He did say, I personally do not understand why religion should be given this vast, expansive jurisdiction so as to cover the whole of life and to prevent the legislature from encroaching upon that field. After all, what are we having this liberty for? So that, in a sense, is what the intent behind the constitution was.
Religion is a very interpretative thing. There are different sects, denominations. They have their own interpretation. So there should be, state should play a secondary role in monitoring, supervising, and intervening if there is gross violation. Unless there is a gross violation or something absolutely unconstitutional, it would be ideal for a pluralistic nation like India to leave them as they are.
Because right. That leave would them as they are is what you are saying, and that's why Zakia is itching to get in now after all of this, because Zakia is saying, but that's exactly where you can't leave things as they are, because she and others have been leading this campaign against the practice of triple talaq and other practices in the way Islam is sometimes practiced in parts of the country, which you feel are again violative of your rights and of the constitution and another very important constitutional provision, which is the fundamental right to equality.
I think religiosity is fine, and all of us are religious to greater or lesser extent. The problem arises with institutionalized religion. It is the organization, you know, which is part of the institutionalized religion, which decides for others what they should do, what they should not do, what you can wear, what you can eat, who you can marry, which place you can enter. It gives more rights to the men over the women. So the problem is the institutionalized religion. And I think our constitution is a beautiful balance between individual freedoms and the right to religious freedom. And it's also a beautiful balance between the principle of secularism on the one hand and individual right to religious freedom on the other. For instance, it nowhere presupposes that males will have precedence over females. And that is one of the fundamental problems in our kind of religiosity in our subcontinent, okay. Particularly.
So it's in this subcontinent, large parts of the world, we're taking religion, I think, one step far. But let me just get, both from Kamal Farooqi and from Maulana Khalid Rashid Firangi Maheli, why they have reacted so strongly to what the state did. So why don't I start with you, Maulana Saab? It's a very strong reaction that the Muslim Personal Law Board has come out with. And you've, of course, taken on the center, and you're saying that the Modi government is virtually, I think, trying to wage internal war or something like that, is what I think you said. Why are you seeing this almost as an attack on Islam?
As far as this particular case of triple talaq or the case in the Supreme Court is concerned, whatever the central government has said in its affidavit, I think that it is an open attack on the Muslim personal law. That's why Muslim Personal Law Board has come out very strongly and clearly stated that we will not tolerate any interference in our Muslim personal laws, which are very rightly and very strongly guaranteed by the constitution of our country.
That point is well taken up to a point, and here's where the point comes in. What you said would be absolutely correct if you had a situation where within the Muslim community, the Muslim Personal Law Board, for example, was taking cognizance of some of the issues that have been raised, some of the flaws with triple talaq, the way it is actually carried out, some of the problems with maintenance and polygamy and other issues. If you were coming out and reforming it yourself, as has happened in 19 or 20 other fully Muslim countries, you know, in Islamic countries, sometimes these reforms have been carried out. If you'd carried out the same reform, maybe the state would not have to intervene. But what people like Zakia and others say is, you are not reforming, which is why they have no recourse but to go to the courts and to the others to to try and get change because you're refusing to change?
There are less than 1% of the cases related to triple talaq in our community. Secondly, the All India Muslim Personal Law Board has already started a movement by the name of Reform in Society, in which we have already organized big conferences in which a number and in which thousands and thousands of Muslim women have participated. And we are very, very clearly telling both men and women what are their rights and what are their duties, especially related to the law of talaq and law of nikah. We have already started the reform process, but the state has no business to interfere in the Muslim or in any personal law matters.
I'm going to come to Zakia, and I know what Kamal Farooqi is going to say, and I know you're going to pull out a book. Kamal, I'm sure you've got it with you again.
You have stopped me not to bring the book here.
I know you're going to bring the book again, because every time we have this discussion, Kamal Farooqi produces a book which he says has got the correct way in which nikah should be done and talaq should be done, and you're trying to popularize it. But I'm again going to say that because we've been having this debate or discussion, Kamal Saab, you were for 10 years maybe now, 15 years maybe now, and every time you bring that book and you say this is what we are bringing out, obviously it's not going far enough. If you were to take enough steps for reform within the community, Zakia wouldn't have a problem. She wouldn't have to go to the courts.
I don't want to comment on Zakia because that is what they have done. They are in the court. We are also in the court. We have already replied. We'll reply further.
If you'd been more proactive.
She has gone to the court thanks to the Honorable Supreme Court, wherein the Muslims were not involved in the fight between the husband and wife, which was relating to a Hindu marriage act, in fact. Nowhere Muslims were involved into it. In this particular case, when the Suomoto petition was asked by the Honorable Judge, nowhere the Muslim women there, and nowhere any pendency was there in the Supreme Court, but she suddenly brought in that issue. At that particular point of time, two things have to be made very clearly understood. Now, we have to discuss the issue, two issues, whether by this talaq and Muslim institution of the marriage, are the women are in a disadvantageous position? That is what the cry is. This is the possibility.
Everyone who was standing there at that press conference this week were all men. Saying that no, women don't have a problem.
In fact, it means you do not know about it. They are there. And they were there also. I'm saying that the question is whether the women, Muslim women, are in a disadvantageous position as far as the marriage is concerned. Number one, this is a very important question.
Fictitious characters who have gone to the Supreme Court, and there are so many cases of Muslim women pending in front of various high courts, various session courts. We have put so many Muslim women in front of the whole world and even the media to see. Last year there was a public hearing where more than 100 women themselves with their own words narrated their own testimonies of how they had undergone triple talaq.
Zakia, the Maulana himself said that we have discussed men's rules and women's rules. Means he's making a difference. Contradiction.
Vikram, say all these issues which she are talking about, she has been carrying on the census, she has been the kind of census she has created on world and all. The answer you will get within the next 30 days, then when you will know that lakhs and lakhs of the Muslim women will say and are saying that they don't want any kind of...
Taking advantage of the situation.
Yes.
The basic question is whether the Muslim women are in a disadvantageous position in Muslim personal law in the matter of marriage, divorce, inheritance, all these kind of things. Are they disadvantageous?
Kamal Saab, and let me also throw this to Maulana Saab. Some of these provisions are provisions that you yourself have conceded repeatedly, including on this program, that, this is not the right way to do it. Triple talaq should not be done in this manner. You yourself have said it.
You have forgot about triple talaq. As far as the divorce is concerned, divorce is the most unpleasant thing which is being
but
allowed.
Triple talaq in this present manner is something that you yourself say is wrong. So why don't you speak against it? Maulana Sarveen has come to you, actually. Let me ask you, because you personally and others like you come out and you issued fatwas against terrorism, for example. You issued fatwas against various forms of extremism. And that is, you know, that's laudable. If you feel that certain practices within the Muslim community are not being done absolutely correctly, you could come out, you could speak, you could issue a fatwa, you could declare it in Friday sermons and saying that please make sure that these things should not be done and that Muslim women should not be disadvantaged in this manner. And if you would take the lead in that, then you're right, the courts don't need to step in and neither does the state. But why aren't you doing more of it, Maulana Saab?
So we in our Friday sermons are giving lectures on the topic of Muslim personal laws. What are the rights of women, Muslim women? What are the rights of Muslim men? And we are also talking about what are the gender equality concept in Islam. One thing. Second thing is that today only we have started a signature campaign in which hundreds and hundreds of Muslim women have openly participated at Eidgah. That goes on to prove that the Muslim women of this country do not want any change in their Muslim personal law. If there are certain people who are misusing the law of talaq, especially the law of triple talaq, it does not mean that you will altogether abolish that law.
Let me tell you one thing. Mm-hmm. Even Suman will say it, ignorance of law is no excuse. As far as we are concerned, marriage is a contract, and contract is a written contract. And in that written contract, the conditions have to be laid down. And that contract to be signed would be by the would-be husband and the would-be wife. And the girl has got the liberty to ask kubul, kubul, kubul. Now, it is for the girl and the girl's parents to put up the condition even about the divorce. She can take away the rights of the husband of the divorce in that contract itself.
Then what is the problem in putting all these down?
Then what is the problem?
Is
the people like you are unnecessarily trying to provoke
it? Put it down
provoke.
In the form
you
of a law. In any
this
case,
is the kind of, listen,
you,
this is the
you're
faith.
Saying it exists.
This is the faith.
Then why not write
any person,
it down in the form
any person
of a law?
Who believes in Islam, that is the faith, in fact, which is more required. I'm not asking everybody.
But can I just?
I'm not asking in Suman. We have got a provision in the Indian Marriage Act, which allows anybody to go and get the marriage registered under the different law. Then no Muslim personal law, no Hindu law, no Sikh law will be applicable. They are free to go over there, perform their nikah over there, perform their marriage over there. Nobody, and they will be out
okay,
of
but
that.
But Zakia's
just
point,
like,
why don't you in Muslim personal law in the country, well, like has happened in a number of Islamic states,
she has got to talk.
Make the
what
change.
Business she has got to talk? She has to have the faith.
Just as much
she
as
has
you
faith.
Have got.
I believe
just
in Islam.
As much
listen,
as you have got.
Listen.
Just as much as you
she
have got.
The right
I tell you.
Why
I tell you. I tell you, Vikram. I tell you. No, I tell you. Enough is enough. For being a Muslim, there are three important things which are required. Three important things are required. You have to believe in the oneness of God. You have to believe in the Prophet's life,
yes.
You have to believe in Ijra. All these three things put together are the, in fact, the Islamic jurisprudence.
So why does she
so
not have
anybody,
dispute
listen,
about
listen,
that?
If
what
anybody,
but she's not disputing
anybody
that.
Does not believe in Islam, that? If anybody does not believe in Islam, he has got no right. She is not right unnecessarily.
Why are you saying that she doesn't believe in Islam?
Yeah,
is that a rather personal comment to make?
Yeah. One more,
that's a rather personal.
She is not disputing.
Has she said she doesn't believe in any of those three things that
you
said?
She has to answer properly herself.
Vikram,
I don't want to personally say about all this kind of things. I don't want to bring the personalities into it. She has to answer whether she believes Islam or not.
Yes, yes.
But it's not saying Islam. It's not saying that
about
Islam. It means you have to practice
Islam. This is not about Islam. Why are we discussing only Islam? This is not about Islam.
The matters are between me and my Allah.
Yes.
And nobody, including Mr. Farooqi, has any right to decide on behalf of me. That is
what.
Second,
I'm not discussing
second,
anything about that.
The four fundamental values of Islam are justice, wisdom, kindness, and compassion.
And from
tell
where it
me,
comes.
Tell
from
me,
where it comes.
Triple talaq, polygamy,
from where it
halala.
Comes.
Is it any of these? Do
and
they confirm
equality.
On these values?
And
values like
equality.
Justice,
yeah,
wisdom,
I'm glad,
Malana, kindness,
Sahib, you're adding
and
gender
compassion.
Equality because then that's a key
gender,
part of
yeah.
all of this. All right.
Gender equality
yeah,
is
have,
the fundamental
have,
principle
have
of
many,
Quran.
I have many proof to prove my point.
Yes, but okay.
But
so,
not in practice. practice.
All right.
That is where they are resisting.
No, that's a question. It is the problem of the ignorance of my girls. Can I just zoom out?
Let me come back to the broader point. And Justice Sodhi, let me get you in again. And in the last, in December, the court essentially said, if a Muslim woman victim of triple talaq comes to the court and questions the validity of the divorce procedures, we can surely examine the legality of triple talaq and find out whether it violated her fundamental rights. So, to your mind, Justice Sodhi, what is the stance that the courts are taking right now? That if people come to us and are testing freedom of religion as compared to other fundamental rights, then the courts will look at that question. Is that what the legal position right now is?
No right, be it a fundamental right, be it the religious right, no right is absolute. All rights are subject to regulations by the state, by law. Therefore, wherever any religious practice infringes upon the provisions of the Constitution, it can be gone into by the court. Judicial review is an absolute remedy available to every citizen and or human being in the country to avail of. It is a case-to-case study, and if there is any violation of the existing law, that can be remedied and or new laws formed to ensure the Constitution and the laws formed under it are running smoothly and the rule of law is obeyed.
So, and you're saying that applies irrespective of whether we actually have a uniform civil code in this country. Is that what you're saying?
Everybody.
That is why, Vikram, we are demanding a long-term codification of Muslim personal law. Just like we have the Hindu Marriage Act, Hindu Succession Act, Christian Marriage and Divorce Act, similarly, we need to have a Muslim Family Act, which is based on the Quranic tenets and is in consonance with the constitutional values. Okay. That is what we are saying.
So now going forward, on the premise that a certain reform is going to be called in for, one possibility is that everything will keep going to the courts and the courts are going to have to decide it, or all the various communities can come together and say, look, this is what we think the right way forward is. And there are two possibilities. One is to have a uniform civil code, as some people are saying. The other is for every community within itself to try and codify or try and have reform to make sure that there's nothing which seems to be a gross violation. So let me get everyone's take on this. What is the right way to go forward? A uniform civil code or every community tries to reform itself?
There have to be some things that have to be common across all communities, which keep in mind the law of the land first. Universally, common sense will tell you, keeping apart
between children's rights, their disagreements right now in the Jain community, things, you and she are not agreeing on what
keeping
what
aside religious leanings and the male ego. Keeping aside these two things, I think we can agree on most things on this planet.
Keeping aside male ego, and yeah, you're right. Keeping aside religion and male egos, you're right, there'll be probably no problems in the
religion
country.
Religion is responsible for 50% of our problems, man.
Think about Donald Trump will be likely to set aside male egos.
So if we come across, if we have a common minimum agenda, then at least see something which are pretty apparent and obvious. Yes, at least that we can come on.
If you come up with a common minimum agenda for all religions to follow in this country,
I should run for office, right?
I'll vote for you, Prime Minister. I'll vote for you as the Secretary General of the United Nations. I'm sure everyone else would as well. All right, your thoughts.
My view is that even if the state intervenes, there is a limitation. There is a kind of periphery which it will not be able to enter because they will not understand the whole philosophy, the relevance of a Jain socialite regarding forgiveness, regarding non-violence, which teaches coexistence.
No, but then things can happen which may get the rest of the, get everyone else slightly concerned, because as he said,
yes.
About the violation of children's rights.
So now a person has taken an excess. Definitely, this is a point which we need to discuss with our religious leaders and our activists, definitely, and we'll come to a common platform.
Okay.
Religion is totally something different because it is based on your own belief, your own faith. It cannot be imposed or on you or as such. But when it comes to child rights, the children will have to be definitely treated separately. They cannot be deprived of their own entitlements which is due to them.
So can we
children,
have
a child of 10, 11, 12, 13, I'm again reiterating, is not capable of thinking for himself or herself.
Can the state pass a ruling or an enactment?
But do you want the state to pass a ruling or should the community not do it itself?
No, the community will do it. The community shall do it.
Is it better for the community to do it or is it better for the state to come in? The state can come in and saying, anybody state found guilty of, right, and that's what's going to happen in this case.
Sir, if
the parents,
it's very difficult for the community to do it.
Why?
Because the community leader is actually propagating the legacy. Yes.
Maulana Sahab, this is again, it brings us back to the same question, that at the end of the day, you and other members of the Muslim community feel that this entire demand for the Uniform Civil Code has got political overtones to it and has got political connotations to it. And you may well be right in believing that way. But isn't the answer for that then to do what is being said out here, that if the community sorts out a lot of the reform measures internally, it takes away some of the sting in people saying that you have to reform? And if the community is not going to have internal reform, then maybe the state has to intervene.
See, the issue of common civil court will be raised up to the election of Uttar Pradesh, and then it will be a die down. The second thing is that as far as common minimum program is concerned, among religious communities, it can be that we all must respect each and every other religion, but follow our own religion in letter and spirit. And if there are certain practices within our religion which need reform, that reform must come within the society.
Rahul Ishwar, would you broadly agree with that? I mean, he was saying that we should have a common minimum program that all religions should agree to follow
agree
in India.
That. Trust
so that
me,
the state
more than what the media
thinks,
these religious people or spiritual people are more in sync, and they can work for a consensus, and they can bring to a common ground in a lot of things. Let that, you know, there can be a kind of consensus that should be respected rather than promoting an anti-religious posturing and an anti-spiritual posturing. There is a lot of room for talk.
What about patriarchy? What about the patriarchal stranglehold over our society through the religious institutions? That needs to be addressed. That's the key question.
And Zakia's point is that in some of those issues, Rahul, I think what she's trying to allude to, and she's saying it politely, is that in some of those areas, you and Kamal Saab might agree a lot more than she will agree with either of you.
We believe in gender justice. We believe in gender
equality.
But all religions point out about gender diversity, gender complementarity. There is a space for both to exist.
Yeah.
Gender equality and gender diversity.
That
gender uniqueness is a premise all religions point out to.
Okay. Kamal Saab, you also find you agree more with Rahul than you do with her?
Yes.
Except her, everybody is in agreement. And my dear friend will be having a different view on this. Yes.
Please, let me
still get him in.
I would like to make one single point.
So far, all the religious. So far, the
Vikram. Vikram, I would like to make
that is the fastest breakdown of a consensus I've ever seen.
Vikram, I would like to make one quick remark here. In our country, irrespective of the communities, irrespective of the religion, our girl child, our female have been subjected to complete suppression. Disrespect, complete exploitation, complete abuse. I think this is the point, probably time that we have to take a stand, take a call on that, and give them their dues, which we have failed.
This is where this male ego needs to be fixed.
I have not finished my thing.
And it can be fixed only by a man, not by a woman.
Okay. So I 100% agree that in my country, this is happening.
We 100% agree.
100% agree that this is happening in my country. This is happening in my country. And yes, we have got a case wherein the gender equality has to be there. Now, we have to understand that gender equality has to be done in a proper manner. I confess here that Muslim Personal Law Board has not been in a position to educate our people properly in a way that they should not go into that. And if this...
Now I'm in agreement.
No, it's really, okay, very good. Now, if I tell you that, again I'm talking, if the contract, if it is being signed with open eyes, if my girls are properly educated, if the girls' fathers are properly educated, they can put up the conditions wherein these inequalities would not happen.
You could take it one step forward. I know you have a model draft contract and you think this is the contract that should be followed. If you really wanted reform, you could move much faster than you're doing right now, as could the Jain community, as could the other communities on this particular issue.
I don't want to comment on the Jain community. Small community, but no, she has not very clearly said that they are going to abolition and all those kinds of things.
No, we are not talking about abolition.
That's
what
I'm saying. And
I don't want to sacrifice spirituality.
What she said is that we need to look at it after what's happened.
Look, again, there's a difference. What I'm trying
you
to tell
you... simply say
we
that...
Must
you could say somebody who does triple talaq in his mandate is going to be ostracized. You could take a strong position should you want to.
Yes, if there is a possibility in bringing out in the change in the criminal law that anybody who does it, he will be lashed what was done in the earlier era, or he will be sentenced, I will be with them. But before that, I am for it.
You can have other strictures.
Yeah, other strictures also. What I'm saying, Vikram, we agree
that this whatever model nikahnama is, it has to be publicized larger. And I again thank you very much. Because of you, lots of people have started coming and asking us where is the nikahnama.
Both the religious law and the secular law, such as the Special Marriages Act, should be made available. These options should be made available to every Indian citizen. Let the citizen decide whether she wants
I'm
to
sorry,
do Saat
are they not available? I'm sorry, are they not available? Can anybody deny into marriage?
Can I put across my point of view?
No, but you are saying something wrong.
I am saying, Vikram, what I am saying is the Uniform Civil Code already exists in our country through the Special Marriages Act. Just expand this act. Strengthen this act, consolidate this act to include all aspects of marriage and family, and make that alternative available to all Indians, is all that I'm saying.
All right, let me just turn to the audience and see what they have to say.
Sir, in the Quran, there are surahs like Surah Al-Talaq, Surah Al-Baqarah, which states, you know, the three basic practices which should be followed, or which should be, you know, not procedure, but ways according to which a talaq should be and could be done. And those things are not being in practice here. So, wouldn't concretizing it by you know, bringing reform, by bringing proper laws on it, help the women? And as to answer your question, that are women in a disqualified or in a bad state? Sir, people, women are coming to Supreme Court. Women are raising their voices. Okay. This shows that they are.
Maulana Sahib, in fact, do you want to respond to what the gentleman in the audience has said, that when a lot of these provisions are there in Islam as to what should actually happen? And that brings me back to my point. Maybe people like you should take a greater lead in publicizing them and popularizing them.
I want to again emphasize that gender equality has already been ensured by Islam. And as far as the various process of divorce or talaq is concerned, one way has been defined by the Quran, and the other ways have been defined by the tradition of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And Muslim personal law, Islamic Shariat, is a compilation of Quran and Hadith. As far as the right way of professing and practicing our religion is concerned, we will try to move forward in that direction more fastly and more quickly also.
Let me just get everyone's take on that. Rahul Isha, very briefly, just one line from everyone. The question of a uniform civil code that many people were saying, has it become a political issue now, or is it something that we should push towards?
It should be a slow and steady process rather than pushing it for other agendas, which many people may have. It should be a unifying, it should be harmonizing of our diversity, not negation of our diversity and pluralism.
There will be a large section of people in this country, that's the Hindu populace, which should be against the uniform civil code. So I think the government of the day better be wary of that. Yeah. If it's for political reasons, it's going to backfire majorly.
Okay, uniform civil code.
Well, the uniform code, if it comes, it cannot sacrifice spirituality at the altar of uniform code. Okay, we
so
need
it's,
to.
It's now sounding to me as they're not just sections of the Muslim community which are going to object to a uniform civil code.
I think if we have to develop this country as a nation, we must go in for a uniform civil code.
Kamal sir,
our country is already making good progress. We are proud of it. And we, as far as we are concerned, we believe in the diversity, we believe, we respect the religion, and uniform civil code is not possible. It is only a political agenda. Otherwise, what all other people are saying, let them bring a draft and let them first discuss among the 87% of the population, then come to the Muslims.
Okay.
Reformed and codified Muslim personal law and a strengthened Special Marriages Act. Both alternatives to be made available to all Indian citizens.
While agreeing with her, as far as the Indian Marriage Act is concerned, strengthen it as far as possible. Whatever she wants to do it in the Muslim law, do it in the Indian Marriage Act, and let it be available to all the people, whether the Hindus
That's
or Muslims.
What she's saying.
Who is stopping it? Who is stopping it?
We're not that far.
Don't disturb the Muslim law. Don't disturb the Muslim
law. Reformed and codified Muslim personal law.
You have a choice.
You have against reforming Muslim
personal law. You have a choice. You have a choice.
That's a constitutional mandate. It's an imperative. Reformed and codified Muslim personal law is the constitutional.
All right, fine. Final word on the program coming from you, Justice Sodhi. This entire talk of uniform civil code, we just heard some of the Muslim leaders themselves saying that not even everyone in the Hindu community is going to agree to it. So this is just a political cry. Would you agree with that?
No, I don't agree to that. But however, I am of the view that a common civil code is not possible for reasons that way is the how do you reconcile practice and propagation of the religion if there's going to be a common code. Yes, on conditions or where the practices of a religion are in conflict with the constitution, yes, you can put a question mark on that, but you cannot allow or you cannot stop all practices which are germane and essential to a particular religion and enforce that on everybody else.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining us. Not as easy as it sounds, but in these matters, never are. Well, let's just try and see if everyone, every community within the country should at least start off by taking a look at some of the practices that there are. And some of the things that we hear about, some of the extreme cases that Zakia and others are referring to, where women are treated badly, are treated shabbily, are thrown out of their homes with a very hasty triple talaq, that's wrong. And I think...
Thanks God, we are out of the firing line, at least on uniform civil code. Thanks God.
Well, not necessarily. We have to try and figure out reforms and all of that, right?
The majority of the people are on the same.
Every community should try to reform, should try and reform some of these issues.
Everybody's online.
I don't know why you keep on saying...
Because she's the one who's been talking about.
No, I'm still saying that. I think she's also talking about... But she's also asking about reform, and I think that's what something which is required. I think everyone needs to introspect and try and stamp out whatever social evils there are in our respective communities. I think it's incumbent upon every community, every citizen, to try and make sure we're not having some of these things.
If you say
things.
That you don't want reforms, it means you're perfect. So, yes. Contradiction. Yes.
If you don't want to reform, it means you're perfect. So you should always prefer reform.
Nobody's arguing it.
Then great, you should be open to reform then.
We are within ourselves, as she rightly said.
Zakia is asking
reforming the entire law. She is talking about the Indian marriage act. I'm with her. She can go over there. She has already gone over there. What is the problem?
All right.
I was keeping on trying to get a consensus, but it's
not going to be that easy. That's it on this episode of The Big Five. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.